This episode of Bun in the Oven is sponsored by The Bump Plan. Given the theme of this podcast, I imagine that some of you are currently pregnant or planning a family. So many women I know just aren't sure how to move their body safely during this changing time. Or they want to stay active but need someone to show them the way and hold their hand. That's where The Bump Plan comes in. The Bump Plan is a holistic prenatal fitness plan that allows you to work out with confidence at each trimester of your pregnancy. Founded by myself, Holly Grant, the Bump Plan has already helped over 10,000 pregnant women stay active safely and feel empowered throughout their pregnancies. Through its trimester-specific workouts, in which I'm always at the same stage of my pregnancy as you will be in yours, hypnobirthing subscription and extensive education hub, you'll feel supported and part of a welcome community. Let me help you move safely through your pregnancy, maintain your fitness and strength, and enter parenthood strong and prepared for all the demands it poses. As a listener of Bun in the Oven, I'm offering you £5 per month off the cost of your monthly subscription to the Bump Plan, simply by entering the code BUN at checkout. To get started today, simply head to pilatespt.co.uk/the-bump-plan and enter the code BUN at checkout. That's B-U-N in lowercase to get £5 off the monthly cost of the Bump Plan. Join our community today and stay strong throughout your pregnancy. Man meets woman, man marries woman, man has sex with woman, woman gets pregnant. This is the story we so often hear about how children are made, but this is just not the reality for everyone. My name's Holly Grant. I'm the founder of The Bump Plan and you're listening to Bun in the Oven, a podcast that explores the myriad of challenges and routes to becoming and being a parent. For the last 11 years, I've worked across the globe as a Pilates instructor and advanced pre- and postnatal fitness specialist. During that time, I've worked with thousands of people, have heard hundreds of stories about fertility, infertility, pregnancy, and parenthood, and have learned so much about the often rocky road to becoming a parent, which I find fascinating. Bun in the Oven will dive into the many different ways children are brought into this world and what parenting really involves. I hope you find this podcast a huge source of support and that it helps open all our minds. In this week's episode, we'll be talking about single parenting with two incredible women who've chosen to create and raise children on their own. My guests are Liv Thorne and Amy Jones.
I mean, this guy is not Herb's dad. He's not Herb's father. He's a donor. He has nothing to do with Herb. Apart from the fact he's my absolute hero, we have nothing to do with him. Obviously, well, Herb might when he's 18, but at the moment, he isn't related to us. He just gave us a gift, but he's very much not Herb's dad. And so anything that has been passed down is through genetics rather than nurture. But Herb is 100% me. I mean, the kid, it's terrifying how like me he is. It's like the donor had a blank face and donor literally just had no characteristics because Herb is my absolute doppelganger.
Liv Thorne is the director of a web design agency, mum to her son Herb, butler to Elvis, the 13-year-old terrier, and creator of the popular Instagram account at Liv's Alone. Through her Instagram and recent book, she has documented her experience and journey of becoming a single mother after never really finding the one. There is a saying that everyone has a book in them. She just didn't realize hers would be about buying sperm. Liv's book, Liv's Alone, Amateur Adventures in Solo Motherhood, has been a huge success. Understandably. Amy Jones is a management consultant by day, fitness blogger by night. She recently made the decision that her journey to finding the one was potentially holding her back from her desire to have her own child. Taking things into her own hands, she is now embarking on her biggest adventure to date as she kicks off her journey to become a solo mother. She has been incredibly honest on social media about all aspects of this journey and also hopes that she can show other women considering this route that it is possible. In this episode, we discuss how to physically create a baby when you haven't a partner, the reaction and support received by friends and family, and the challenges and joys of being a single parent. I hope that it not only helps those of you embarking on the same path, but also those of you who are single parenting due to divorce or loss. I hope you all enjoy this episode and find strength and support within it.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Liv and Amy. Thank you so much for being on today's podcast.
Hi.
Yes, hello.
Especially because I know that right now it's a really, really busy time for all of us, given that it's nearly Christmas. Liv, you're also incredibly busy with your book and all of the associated other work that comes with that. And Amy, you are embarking on a very, very exciting journey right now. So lots for you to think about. And you haven't had a huge amount of sleep last night. So here we are, but we've made it. We're all here. So what I would love to start with, first of all, is you guys give me a bit of information from your own side of things as to who you are and who's at home with you and a little bit about what you do. So Liv, did you want to go first?
Sure. So I'm Liv. I am 42. I've got a 3.5-year-old son, Herb, who is a sperm donor baby. And I started the journey to become a solo mum when I was about, I want to say 36, but it could have been 37. I'm really bad with numbers. And I live at home with him. I've got a full-time job at a design agency, and I've got a 13-year-old terrier. So yeah, that is my world.
And you wrote a book.
Oh, and I wrote a book.
And you've got an amazing Instagram channel as well. Which, do you think that's kind of where everything started for you? Is that how the book came about?
What, Instagram?
Yeah.
Yes. The publisher contacted me through Instagram to see if I wanted to write a book. And I said, absolutely, I'd love to, because I'm really passionate about people knowing about other routes to parenthood. And then I signed it and it was all like, oh, this is exciting. And then the pandemic hit. And I was stuck at home with a 2-year-old and a full-time job and no childcare and a really big book deadline and moving house. So, you know.
Writing a book is also just incredibly time consuming, stressful,
all
encompassing. And I think, you know, it's so easy to underestimate that given that there's so many books are released every single day. But when you're an author, writing a book, it takes
it's tough. It properly gave me a breakdown. I think people think a joke, think I'm joking when I say I had a breakdown writing it, but I was found in the corner of a room shaking because there was just so much going on and I couldn't handle it. It was just, yeah. So yeah, it's tough. I think everyone thinks it's very glitzy and you're paid billions of pounds. God, no. You know, I wish.
Well, we'll come back to that as well, because it's a really, yeah, it's amazing that they reached out to you and that you've been able to share your story with so many people. Amy, a little bit of information about yourself.
Absolutely. So I am Amy. I'm 37. So I have a full-time job as well as a management consultant, but I'm also a fitness blogger. And I have been thinking about this whole process for a little while. So I got my eggs frozen when I was 35. But it was only in September when I just decided. I'm the sort of person that when I just decide, I just go for it. So I kind of just woke up one day in September and was like, yeah, I'm going to do this. So I have done pretty much all the pre stuff and I'm ready to go.
That's so exciting. And so, you know, you had them frozen at 35. So it's obviously something that you'd already been contemplating. How long had you been thinking about doing that?
I think I was more thinking about having my eggs frozen so that for when I met my person, and then my mind kind of started shifting towards that I may not meet the person in time. I'm sure I will one day, but I may not meet them in time, which is when I then started thinking the whole solo mama thing.
And it's only something really that we have to think about, isn't it, as women, because there is that constant kind of background noise of, you know, am I getting too old and do I need to do this whilst I'm younger? And it's interesting that, yeah, obviously we're the only ones who have to think about that, but it is something that's constantly thought about. And talk to me then about kind of finding the one then. So I guess you haven't found the one that you would like to choose to have children with. And so that's what's got you thinking about, okay, so I'm going to do this on my own.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I think I've had lots of relationships, and I think like everyone, some have been great guys, some have been less great guys, and for one reason or another, they haven't worked out. But I've been single for the last 4 years because I think I got to a point where I was like, I'm not willing to settle. Like, I'm really, really happy in myself. I'm really, really happy in my life. Like I always say, my life is great. And until I meet someone that enhances it from what it is now, then I would rather do it by myself. Because as I, like meeting someone would be lovely, but I get lots of love and support from elsewhere. But the one thing that I know I would massively regret if I didn't do was being a mum, which is like my main aim in life.
Yeah. And there's the danger if you do feel like there's a real rush to choose somebody because you want to have children with them, that you choose the wrong person.
Yeah, it's a real pressure on dating to, because I don't know about you, Amy, but I mean, I didn't date, I was useless, but all I was ever thinking of, if someone would say, oh, what about that guy or whatever, all I was thinking of was, well, does he want kids?
Yeah.
Or does he want kids soon? You know, and that's not sexy. That is not sexy chat that's the first thing you're thinking about. That was my primary thought, rather than, oh, is he a good guy? Is he kind? Is he nice? La, la, la. I just didn't entertain that. It was all about children. And that's when I decided that actually, not that I'd been in any relationships, it wasn't that I was, you know, leaving a trail of men crying in my wake, but just yeah, that it just shifted, that actually it isn't the relationship as is my primary driver. It is, like you say, Amy, that I wanted to be a mum, and if I fall in love, cool, but actually I had to make it work that I could be a mum before my body told me I couldn't be.
And you're tied to that person like no other tie as well. So the person that you choose to have a baby with, you know, if you do it the alternative way, is that...
But that's not to say it wouldn't have worked out, you know, if I had a relationship with someone and had a baby, because people do it all the time. It's just, yeah, the older you get, the more pressure there is on that.
I couldn't agree more, because when you're younger and you meet someone and you date them, you're no way thinking about like, are they the one? Will they be a good father? And I couldn't agree more. And I think the biological clock actually drives you to literally be thinking about babies with them, rather than, as you're saying, like whether they're actually a good person.
Literally.
So then, Liv, when did you decide that that's the route you were going to go down? Did you know other people who were doing it, or, you know?
No, I didn't know. I didn't know anyone else. I was about Amy's age, but I'd been thinking about it since I was about 25, because all of my friends actually started having kids quite young. And my brothers and sisters are much older than me, so I became an auntie when I was 12. So there've always just been hundreds of kids in my life. So it was just very much, well, I'm going to have some soon. And then it got to 25 and I was like, oh no. And then not realizing that 25 is really young. And then it just kept going, and until it was suddenly like every time a friend had a baby, I'd cry. Or you become really selfish, not intentionally, but your emotions take over. So if your best friend is telling you they're pregnant, all you want to do is run away or burst into tears, or because it's not about you and you want to have a baby so badly. And it seems that everyone else is getting pregnant at the drop of a hat or falling in love or la, 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 la. And you're just there desperate to become a mother. And so that's when I just kind of knew that I had to do something, because crying when people are telling you they're pregnant is not a cool reaction. Like, that's not a sound reaction of a mentally healthy person. So that's when I was like, well, I've got to do something about this.
I don't think it's selfish either, is it, though? It's just that you can't avoid baby chat, baby announcements. It's same, you know, when you're trying for a baby as well, you know, it's everywhere you go, every advert, and you just can't avoid it.
No. And there's, it does make you quite selfish, because you can only think about your needs. You can't I couldn't think about their happiness, like how happy my friends would have been that they were pregnant. My primary reaction was sadness for me. And then a couple of days later, I'd be like, oh, that's really nice that they're pregnant. But it would take me a while to process that and think about it. And, you know, which isn't a cool way to live.
Oh, it's fair enough though. And so you start thinking about it at 25, and then what is the process, you know? So where do you even start?
It depends. I mean, it's so tricky. Amy will know this, and I hate to say it, Amy, it's only going to get worse in terms of how many decisions you have to make and how many directions there can be, or do we go this way or that way, or do we, you know? And I had no idea. I hadn't read any books on it. I hadn't didn't know anyone. So I Googled it to see what I had to do. And a friend of mine was an embryologist, and so she was really matter of fact. She was really cool and just went, "Well, you need sperm, and then you need a clinic. Find a clinic that will do la la la." She was just saying all these words. I was like, "What does that mean? I don't understand what CFH or whatever it is means, or AMH. I just don't. What are you talking about?" So I basically started at Google, and then went from there, which I'm not sure is the greatest route, but it was sort of the only one I had.
Doctor Google.
Yeah, I know it's really awkward, isn't it? Because you don't, there's sort of nowhere else to go where you can get a good, rounded view of everything, but equally, you don't know what of that is real or pushy, or you know, it's Google.
You can go down a bit of a rabbit hole as well, I imagine, and it's difficult
Yeah.
to know what advice is legit and
Especially if you don't know what you're doing. Like, I'd never even been pregnant before, obviously, or I'd never tried to have a baby before. Or so there was just a lot of suddenly you're thrown into a world of acronyms and medical jargon, and suddenly it's deemed totally cool that you walk into a room and your pants have got to be around your ankles within seconds, and a cold wand is inserted into you, and they're talking about how many follicles. Oh, that's a great number of follicles. And you're like, "I don't know what you're talking about. Why are you still talking to me? Please explain." You know, I just felt really out of my depth at the beginning, like, "Whoa."
Well, we've talked about it on a previous episode, which was about how people in same-sex relationships get pregnant, and it was kind of similar there that we're brought up being so afraid of accidentally getting pregnant, and being it being
Yeah.
spoken about like it's so easy to just like catch being pregnant. You have to look at a boy and you get pregnant, and then all of a sudden when you actually start going down that route,
Want to
you
get
realize
pregnant.
how much of a miracle it actually is and how much science goes into it.
Yeah.
And that must be quite intimidating at first.
Actually, I wrote about exactly that in my book, that in schools you're only taught about how not to get pregnant. Literally, the whole narrative is, for the love of God, do not get pregnant. If you do get pregnant, you're going to be a young mum, and that's going to be awful. And you'll be the worst mother in the world because you're young, and just all this really negative stuff about pregnancy. Yet, as soon as you're 24, it's deemed sort of okay that you could fall in love and have a baby. But 4 years before that, heaven forbid. And this weird narrative of age, of motherhood, and when it's deemed acceptable. But you're never taught about how to try to have a baby, or how pregnancy might be, or which is wild
Yeah,
that you don't
I
get
think I
taught
got
it.
to about 30, 32 maybe before I understood like what a cycle was and like
I had
how
no
long is
idea
that
until I tried,
cycle.
yeah, until I tried to get pregnant. I had no idea of my own cycle. I didn't know when I ovulated. I was really naive to anything like that because I'd never needed to know. So I just sort of breezed on. Whereas suddenly I knew everything about it, which I'm sure, Amy, you're in the stage where you know your
No,
cycle well.
I've got a background in biology, so I think I was I'm fortunate in that position, so I understand
Okay.
most of the stuff. But I think what you're saying is absolutely correct in terms of I didn't know when I ovulated, like at all. Like I know it's roughly around day 14,
Yeah.
but it's funny how you go, you go through your whole life not having a clue until you start peeing on the sticks.
Oh God, the goddamn sticks.
And then it becomes all you can think about. It goes from being something you didn't even know was a thing and to
Yeah.
becoming slightly obsessive.
Really obsessive. Yeah.
Amy, when you decided that this is what you wanted to do, did you turn to Google as well? Is that kind of what people need to be doing?
Well, my sister had both of her bubbers through an IVF clinic. So I had already had a clinic in mind. So it meant that I could, and I'd already gone to them for my egg freezing. So therefore, like I had somewhere to go. So what I did instead was I just kind of put in the time with the doctor as the consultation and just asked all the things and just told him to tell me all the things, because I also had absolutely no idea what it involved, because you don't, why would you but that's how I did it instead. But even now, like, things like, everyone, well, I say that, but most people, I think, know what IVF is, but no one knows what IUI is, for example. So that's
no one knows
in utero insemination. So I affectionately call it, you'll see it in my post, turkey bastering. And that's the best way to describe it to people. Because, yeah, if you don't have some kind of science background, then it's really confusing.
Yeah, it is basically a smear test, but with sperm injected into your cervix rather than them scraping it. That's exactly the procedure. So it's the same amount of time. Everything is the same as a smear, just slightly different ending.
But yeah. And there's so much preparation leading up to that as well then, Amy, isn't there? So talk us through kind of what stage you're at now.
Yeah, so I've literally done everything. I've got like a checklist on my phone. When I spoke to the doctor, I kind of wrote down everything he said. So it was kind of come off of like the pill and medication that could be harmful to the baby. Then it's about eating healthily and taking the pregnancy vitamins. But I'll come back to that one at some point, because I think you guys were kind of talking about obsessive and pressure and all the rest of it. And I think it's quite hard, because coming off the medication is giving me side effects, which means that I'm really nauseous and can't eat properly. And I'm really conscious all the time of, I'm supposed to be eating properly and exercising to give my like eggs the best chance. But so after that, you have to do, you know, you've got to start waiting for your period to come back, and then you monitor your cycle. And then on your second period, you go in and get the kind of checks on, you've got to get everything checked, like your tubes, your womb, like everything checked out to make sure it's healthy, etc. You've got to pick the sperm donor. I can't believe I missed that one out. Quite a big one.
Are you doing assisted IUI? Are you having hormone treatment or natural IUI?
They don't think I need to at first. No. So yeah, so they've kind of, looking at my hormone levels and everything, they're going to start off with literally just the turkey.
Nothing. Bastering. Yeah, that's the same as me.
Yeah, and then if it doesn't work, then they'll start looking at kind of putting other things in that can help boost it. So I've literally done everything. I'm waiting for basically the turkey bastering. So that's January.
God, that's so exciting.
Excited.
And I hope this is an okay question to ask, but I would imagine it's the question you get asked the most, is sperm donors then. So how does that work? Is it literally like a catalogue? Is it really low level information that you're given?
It absolutely depends, doesn't it, Amy, where, what clinic you go to, what country you go to, what you want. So depending on what country you go to, the legalities of whether it's a known donor or not. So an open donor, so Herb, for example, can get in contact with his donor when he's 18 if he wants to. But legally in most countries, that's the only way now, but there are some countries that you can still get anonymous, entirely anonymous donors. But that's why sperm donation has gone down, because you can't do it anonymously. So in the UK, we have quite a limited number of sperm donors because of that, mainly. It totally depends on country as to what information you got. I got a shed load of information. Herb's donor is from Denmark, and I got like a dossier, his favorite color, his favorite childhood memory, his paternal and maternal grandparents' height, weight, what they died of, what their occupation was, like stuff I would never know about a partner. And then a tiny little photo of him when he was like 18 months old, which is vaguely pointless because so that's what I got. But it does depend. I don't know where yours was. It US?
Yeah, mine was a US donor. Yeah. I found it really overwhelming at first. So I kind of said it's like Tinder for baby daddies. Like, you literally just have all these like pictures and all this information. Yeah. And I actually got a couple of my friends who I work with, so they're quite good at like process and project management, to come in. And I was like, right, we need to put some like process around this. Cause I opened it and I just got really overwhelmed, because I was like, this is literally choosing.
It's too much, isn't it?
the father of my of my future child. And but yeah, but we kind of, what I'm just thinking, what we had obviously all the characteristics, the height, weight, job, a voice note from him, so my
Yeah,
purpose
same.
speaking, see how he answers certain questions, and yeah, exactly all that. I know the genetic background, the medical background of him and his entire family. And you're absolutely right, these are things that I always should, like, we should ask our like coupled up friends, like, do you know the medical history of
How
your
Granny died.
grandparents? Yes.
Yeah.
And
And
not
how tall Granny
of,
was.
yeah, not just what she died of, but any condition she had.
Yeah.
So it is quite overwhelming. But in the
It's
end,
really overwhelming.
I went on a lot to do with values. So I just, yeah, because he was, he's quite active. He's a family man. He believes in, happiness and being a choice and all these kind of things. So I chose someone who's kind of aligned to me in how I see the world, because it's too hard otherwise. How
Yeah.
do you live?
It's weird. Well, it's odd, isn't it? Because you do have that really, it's so overwhelming because it's such an enormous decision. And where do you start and how do you start siphoning it out and to narrow it down? And at the beginning, I was totally looking at it like it was a date, like, oh, he sounds like he'd be a fun guy, you know. And then I was just like, what the f you know, that's got absolutely sod all to do with his DNA. And my family are riddled with health conditions. So I decided that actually my main option needed to be someone who had great familial health. And so I chose, and not that a sperm bank would ever put someone on there that had appalling familial health, you know, because obviously it's heavily screened. But I just needed to make sure that that was my primary driver. And then from there, I narrowed it down to other things. And then I went for attributes that I was like, oh, okay, that's nice, you know. And actually, I did the opposite. You know, I did someone that was completely opposite to me. So, so things that he liked, I didn't like, or, you know, because I thought that might give, if there was going to be anything. Yeah, he sounded like a real daredevil. And I'm absolutely not. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
Yeah, totally. The one bit that I was like trying not to get like me is that I someone a bit calmer than me, because I'm very like this. So I was like, right, I need someone to balance me out in that respect. So I chose someone whose job that I thought was, he'd have to be quite
it's
level.
chill.
I'm very
Yeah. Which is crazy, isn't it? Because the chances are most of those things won't be brought down through the DNA. But you don't know. That's the thing. And also, there is no right answer. It's not like you suddenly pick donor 7342 and confetti comes down and they're like, yeah, you're right. Well done. You got it. You nailed it. There's none of that. It's just, oh shit, yeah, okay, I'll add that to the basket and get it shipped to the UK. And fingers crossed, let's hope my sperm and his sperm and my egg like each other. You know, it's a frigging lottery.
It is like Amazon, though, as in you literally just add it to the
Added
basket.
to basket. Yeah.
Wow. Liv, knowing all the things about the sperm donor that you know, do you see that then in Herb? Or do you think that's helped shape the way you kind of look at him? Or actually, has that completely gone? Does that feel like that was a part of the process, but actually he is not really that much
Yeah,
part
I
of
mean,
my
most of
life?
it's completely gone, but he'll do some things and it's suddenly like, oh, hang on. The donor said blah, blah, and I'm like, maybe that's from but it's very much, I mean, this guy is not Herb's dad, he's not Herb's father, he's a donor, he has nothing to do with Herb, apart from the fact he's my absolute hero. We have nothing to do with him. Obviously, well, Herb might when he's 18, but at the moment he isn't related to us. He just gave us a gift, but he's very much not Herb's dad. And so anything that has been passed down is through genetics rather than nurture.
And
But
Liv,
Herb is 100% me. I mean, the kid, it's terrifying how like me he is. It's like the donor had a blank face and the donor literally just had no characteristics because Herb is my absolute doppelganger. It's terrifying.
It's the whole nature versus nurture, isn't it? You know,
absolutely.
He has grown up with you 100% in his life. You're the most impact that he has in his life. So, of course, he's going to end up like you.
Yeah, stroppy, opinionated, greedy, you know, all the things.
Self-deprecating.
Oh, he's not that. Jesus. No.
Was a baby daddy.
Is it quite common with solo mums that they do choose to kind of I guess what I'm asking, do they often think of the sperm donor as just the sperm donor who gave the gift of life, or do some people like to think of that person as the father or as the dad, or is it just...
From what I've read in the communities I'm in, it's very frowned upon, I would say. Again, I'm really lax about things like this. I just don't care what people think or say or whatever. But it's very frowned upon to call the donor a dad. And in certain circles, if you call my donor a dad, sure, but he isn't. But I don't care if that's what you think. So I would say most of them don't see it as a dad at all, but someone who has given you a great gift, and because they're not a dad, because they're not your life. I think that's, I would say, in the communities that I'm in, there's definitely no crossover. It's dad and donor, and they definitely don't have dads.
Amy, does that resonate with you as well?
Completely. I completely see it as a donor rather than a father.
Yeah. And Amy, have you found communities? I know, Liv, you're talking about how the circles that you're in, the communities that you've found through being a solo mum. Amy, have you found that there's much of a community for you to join?
Not massively. So I'm trying to set my own one up at the moment. So I just kind of put on Instagram for anyone who's even considering it to just drop into my DMs. And we're only about 12 women so far, but I think it will grow. And it's lovely being able to provide support to other people. Because I had my first meetup the other week, because basically someone said to me, would you ever consider doing meetups? So I was like, sure. And they're all amazing women. It was so lovely to meet them. And I think I realized then that what makes a lot of women feel like they can't do it is thinking they may not have the support. One of the things that I want from the community I'm setting up is that, you know, people support each other. Because I mean, Liv will know, I haven't done this yet, but the bits I would imagine are really hard are quite practical things. Like I'm thinking, like, who's going to put on a wash? Like when I have a baby attached to me and all those kind of things. So I would really love to create an environment in which, you know, that the women support each other at the stages they're at.
Yeah.
And Liv, you've got some banging advice on those sorts of things. Talk us through those first few months, because I did have a husband at home, and I look back on those first few months and just think, my God, that was just so tough. Mm. I can't imagine doing that on my own.
Nor can I. I was really lucky. I'm really close to my two sisters, and they're, like I say, they're both a bit older than me, and they've got grown up kids, and so they're professional mothers. They know what's going on. And so for the first, I want to say, I'm so bad with numbers and memory. I want to say for the first 3 weeks, they were there constantly, one on, one off, so that they could still have a life and stuff. So actually, I think in many respects, I was much luckier than, for example, you, who had your husband. And so people don't think you need support. Whereas there's both of you running around like headless chickens, not having a clue what to do, knackered. Whereas I had, like I say, two professional mothers who one would go, one would come back. Often they'd have the baby through the night. So I say often, I think maybe two or three times. But in that first 3 weeks, that is what restored me, because my labour was not great and my body was pretty broken, and my mind. And sleep was the only sort of restorative thing that I needed actually to help me get better. So things like that, they were worth their weight in anything. I'll never be able to thank them enough for those 3 weeks. And then after that, everything is, you've just got to be really regimented. And I'm not naturally regimented, but I sort of had to become it. So you have to put a wash on once a day, just a little one, because then it's easy to get out. If you put a big wash on, it's going to stay in the washing machine because you can't be bothered to get it out. So you have to put a wash on a day. You have to make sure your freezer is full. If people come round, they come round with a meal, they wash up, you don't do anything. For the first 3 weeks, you preferably lie in bed and do not move. Do not feel the pressure to do that. Oh, baby's first outing to the pub after 3 days. You're like, what the fuck are you doing out of bed? Like, you're still bleeding. You don't know your arse from your elbow yet. Just please lie down. It was tough, but I think, you know, things like the dog, I've got a dog, so I made sure there was a rota for people walking the dog so that if I didn't feel up to it, I knew he'd been walked. So just really dull, practical things that actually made life. And also I used to live next to a meadow and people would walk past my house and I'd literally throw the dog and the baby at them. They were on their way to walk their dog and I'd be like, can you take these please? And then I'd just go and have a nap while they walked around, you know, because I just needed to. And you become really, I'm not naturally good at asking for help, but you become better because you can't, there are times where you can't do it on your own. You've got to have an extra pair of hands to do something. It could be something really ridiculous, but you'll need help.
And people like to help, you know, we sometimes mm-hmm. feel guilty asking for help, but people like to feel helpful. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right, Liv, you just have to get comfortable with just asking people to do
something. And people will say no if they can't, but you'll really find your friends who, it will be the people who aren't prominent in your life currently, who are the ones that want to help more. And the people you thought would be able to help won't be able to as much. It's really odd how there's a shift. And it's lovely, like, but none of it has felt undoable at all. I mean, the first 3 months were tough. I didn't realize I'd concentrated so much on having a baby and being pregnant and the bloody labor that you have no control over that I hadn't really assessed or even thought about the fact that I was gonna have this tiny baby and what that meant and that my body would be healing. And, you know, I was really naive about it all. So that's all I'd say is just prepare for that bit as well as the getting pregnant and the labor, because there's nothing you can do about labor. Especially, I mean, you can prepare yourself and you can get into a good headspace and you can do all the positive thinking and you can look into hypnobirthing and all that sort of stuff, but ultimately most of it is out of your hands, realistically. It's the bit after that you need to just make sure you're really kind to yourself and ask for help.
I hear that a lot from people who have struggled isn't the right word, but had extra difficulties getting pregnant because you've had to think so much about mm-hmm. ovulation, sperm mm-hmm. donors, you know, where am I at in my with my scans, what's the next step, that actually your head's so far in the pregnancy game that we all forget essentially that after that there's actually a baby there. Amy, how are you feeling about all of that? Are you pretty organized?
I'm similar in that I'm not the best at asking for help. I do from my family, but from others, like I like to kind of look after my friends, etc. So I'm not the best at it. But what I've started doing is when someone says to me that they want to be involved in some way, they then get added to my close friends group on Instagram now. And I'm like, literally like, well, you say you want to help. So you're going to be helping now. So I'm like, if you just said it in a polite way, I'm sorry, you're now on.
Yeah, you're in.
So basically when there's an appointment that comes up, I'm going to put, like, you know, if I want someone to come with me, I'm going to put it on that and say if anyone's around, like, come, or, you know, after insemination, etc., you know, the doctors, you know, wants me to rest for a few days, so I want you know, people to come round and cook and help, etc. And I was thinking a similar thing to you, actually, where I was just literally like, I'm going to have a rota is my plan, where I say different people come every day, because it's not too much for anyone,
but exactly then, that
But I know I'll need, so at the moment, obviously, it's always difficult to know how it all manifests in reality. But at the moment, I feel okay with it. And like my mum and dad are already cooking me meals, bless them.
Oh, I
But
love them.
they're like, oh, they're just so sweet. Like they want to be helping as much as they can. They
Yeah,
can't
which is
help with,
perfect. Keep them doing that.
they can't help with that much at the moment. I mean, they sit on my appointments with me with the doctor, and my dad kept asking questions about sperm.
Oh, I love it.
The doctor politely was like, oh, does dad have any questions? And then we thought he'd say no and get all awkward. He's like, I do actually. It's about sperm. And he just kept asking it. I thought they were good questions. It was, how long does it freeze for? And should Amy get extra in case she wants a second baby with it? They were great questions. But I'm very fortunate that my friends and family are super, super supportive.
Yeah.
And I think the advice I would give friends, as someone who's had a baby, is that often your friends will say, if there's anything I can do, let me know. But actually, I think if you can say, can I come over and cook you dinner? Or let me come over and put the washing out for you.
Exactly.
Because you don't always
give them a key.
Just kind of offer what you'd like to do rather than saying if you need anything, because you almost haven't got the brain space to even think about what you need. So just put some
absolutely.
Food on the doorstep or come and clean my house for me.
And yeah, things like cleaning, if you can afford it for the first couple of months, get a cleaner once a week. Because again, anything that just means that when the baby's asleep, you can lie down. Because the whole, sleep when the baby sleeps thing's bullshit. Apart from anything else, if you're the only person at home, that's the only time you've got to do everything else. So things like that, if you can, amazing. Rotas. A friend of mine, one of Herb's godmothers, I used to go to bed at 7, feed Herb, go to bed at 7. She'd then let herself in at 10:30, 11, pick him up, feed him, then put him back down, let herself back out, so that I then had from 7 till the next feed, which is normally about 3, of pure sleep, which was the dream. Things like that are gold. And actually, she loved it. She got a cuddle and she got to feel like a good human. And do you know what I mean? That it is quid pro quo. It's people like to help at that stage.
Yeah,
especially if your friends like mine, where all their kids are a bit older now, so they like they think they like the baby stage, and then they're like, "Woo!"
They were dipping it out.
Exactly.
Amy, both of you, to be honest, but Amy, just because you're kind of in the thick of it right now, you're being really open on social media about your journey, and I think that's great for other women thinking about this or going through it as well and feeling that layer of support. What has the general feedback kind of been from friends and family and social media on your decision to go this route?
Oh, it's been so my mum, my dad and my sister have been encouraging me to do it for such a long time. So they're delighted. Like when I finally decided, my mum and dad bought me flowers and we're just like, let's brilliant, let's get it done. Most people are really, really excited and like just sending really encouraging messages about you're going to be the best mum, etc. But what's really lovely also, I'm calling it team, but it's a team baby. It's all of our baby. Like the whole like sentiment of it takes a village to raise a baby. Like I'm going back to that, as in I'm like, this is all of our responsibility, team. Everyone in my close friends group. I'm literally having that ethos, and people's reactions have been things like, literally they've come out with, we're having a baby, and coming out with, I want to be as involved as you'll let me be. But I have had a couple of bits of trolling as well, but I think that was to be, I kind of was expecting that, to be honest. One message I got, that it wasn't trolling at all. It was from someone I knew when I was younger, and it's not. And at the end of the day, everyone's entitled to their opinions. And it wasn't said in a disrespectful way. He just had the viewpoint that he doesn't think someone should, you should bring a child into the world with one parent. But he kind of said, I've got a lot of love for you, and I know you're a great person, etc. I've had a couple of bits of like actual trolling. My favourite was where someone said that I was going to be responsible for corrupting the whole younger generation. I don't know why they think I'm that influential.
I was going to say, well done.
I mean, if I manage that, then I think I've done quite well, to be honest. But it's like, I am not that influential.
No. Thanks for believing in me.
Yes.
It's one thing that's come out of almost every podcast we've done on this topic, because you know, every episode of this podcast is about, you know, just a slightly less traditional or a slightly alternative way of people becoming parents. It's like some people just cannot get their head around any other way other than man and a woman get married and then they have a baby. But at the end of the day, as long as your child is loved, it really does not matter how it came into the world and who its parents are. I would much rather a child had one parent that wanted them more than anything and was there for them and loved them and supported them than there are so
two
many
average
children.
Parents.
Yeah, exactly. There are so many children out there who do have that mother and father figure at home that maybe don't get the same love. So it really shouldn't matter at all.
No, and I think it's a very privileged position for someone to say, I don't think that's, I wouldn't do that. Like, because you're not me. Mm. And yeah, I don't have any parents. My parents died when I was a teenager. And I'm kind of okay. I mean, I have issues, clearly. But it would be weird if I didn't. But do you know what I mean? Would I have loved to have grown up with parents? Would I love to be 42 and have parents patting me on the back and going to Christmas? And of course I would. But that isn't what life has given me. And so that doesn't mean my life's any worse than anyone else's. Oddly, I've never had a troll. She says, tapping everything. Yeah. Not one. Once I did an article in the Telegraph and someone said that I was talking about babies like they were a handbag. And I was like, dude, you don't buy handbags from Denmark. You buy them from Italy. So.
Oh, I also got the one saying that I was doing it for Instagram followers. And I'd responded, I would have been like, I could get followers. If I just got my entire bare bum out, I would get my followers a lot quicker and it would be a lot easier.
But also things like that are extraordinary. And that says a lot more about them.
Doesn't bother me.
No, exactly. It's like, and often it is men that have... that are worried about bringing kids without a father. And I get that, because it must be quite odd. Because again, for us, it's a really privileged thing to be able to do as middle-class white women, to have the money to be able to walk into a clinic and go, I want to make my dreams come true, and find a donor that looks like us and we can afford to get it and all of that kind of thing. If we were a black man, who wanted to do this, life would be really, I mean, it's totally possible and there are ways of doing it. Of course there are, but it is 38 levels harder than what we're doing. Mm. And that, I think about that all the time, about how fucking lucky I am that I wanted to be a mum and I could make it happen in a legal way with love and support and the money to be able to do it. Like, Jesus.
I couldn't agree more. And one thing that I genuinely thought I would lose all my male followers and they would be like, oh, this is not what we signed up for at all. But what I've been absolutely like beyond, like, I hate to say it, by surprise, but actually really pleasantly surprised by, is how many guys are messaging me like, you're so brave, your baby's so lucky to have such a brave, independent mama, and all those kind of things. So rather than what I thought I was going to get, it's much more about that. Yeah. And people saying how brilliant they think it is, but also exactly what you were just saying, like one guy messaged me and said, I would love to have a baby by myself, but I hadn't really thought about that until he messaged me, and I was like, gosh, it's so true. Like, yeah. You know, at the end of the day, I can get, you know, as I keep calling it, turkey basted, whereas he'd have to get an egg, a surrogate, and it's just so much more difficult
and expensive.
And ours are expensive, but that is just
that's a whole other level.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah, going back to what you just said, Liv, about how, you know, you think every day, you know, how fucking lucky you are. Mum guilt is obviously a huge thing, and what we often hear, or what I often hear from clients, is, you know, if they've had difficulty getting pregnant, mum guilt's almost even more extreme, because they feel like I tried so hard and I wanted this child so much that any time they're thinking I'm not enjoying this right now, they feel really guilty. And anyone who's had children will know that there are days where you do think like, oh my God, years where you think, toddler, I've got a cut on my lip because my toddler scratched me during a tantrum. You know, there are days where you think like, I'm not really enjoying this. Yeah. Liv, did you find that there was that kind of feeling of like, I've tried so hard to get you here, and yes, now I don't feel like I'm enjoying it as much as I should?
Yeah, and that the first 3 months I assumed I'd be bathing in like excited maternal glow because I'd wanted it so long. I'd gone through so much to get there. I jumped through hoops, and finally I had this perfect baby boy, and I felt like shit. I loved him, but I wasn't in love with him. I didn't have that kind of, isn't life amazing? I didn't have that at all until my sister took him away for like a night. It wasn't even 24 hours. And when he came back, I was thrilled. And I was like, okay, cool. I do really love you. But when I was in it, I didn't at all. And actually, I wrote about it. And the amount of people that came to me and just said, it's fucking hard. Don't worry about it. Everyone feels like this. And ever since, I've never really had guilt about it because, I mean, they're psychotic children. and you know, sometimes they're just irrational. I mean, they're not in their head, obviously. But to us, to try and remember how they're feeling, they're being irrational. And you can't be swamped with love when you're with an irrational tiny little whirlwind all the time. And Herb and I fight a lot. Like, it's intense. It's just us two. We fight all the time. We're both quite big characters and we fight, and that's okay. And then we'll come and say, oh, I'm so sorry, and he's like, I'm sorry, mummy, I shouldn't have done that. And I'm like, no, and I shouldn't have replied. And I think I don't have guilt anymore about it, but that first 3 months I felt like I couldn't admit that I wasn't enjoying every single second of it because I'd longed for it. And I told everybody how much I wanted to be a baby. And I was so desperate to have a baby. I had it on my own. And oh my God, now the baby's here. And it's a bit hard. Of course, it's a bit hard. You know, that kind of, I didn't want to sound like that, not that person, but as in someone that was like, I want this. And oh no, now I've got it. It's hard. You know, until I was just like, actually, people must feel like this. They must do. Like, it is intense. You can't, for it not to affect you would be weirder than it affecting you, you know?
Yeah. There's just a lot of pressure, isn't there, for you to enjoy every single moment. And often,
yeah, and I think that's bullshit. I don't enjoy every single moment of anything.
True. Like,
you know, and I don't think it's normal to. Honestly, I really don't. You know, there are films I love that I don't love all of the scenes, because that's how life works. There's a yin yang to everything, and parenthood, definitely
tough.
All of those things.
Yeah, it's challenging,
but amazing.
Yeah.
Sorry, Amy. It's really, I hate that there's this sort of scaremongering bit of motherhood as well.
No, not at all. Like, I'm aware of all this. I know that it's whatever I think in my head, it's going to be so much harder.
Yeah, but actually, equally, the highs are going to be much higher. That's the other thing, that whenever people give you scare stories, and actually they're not scare stories. It's just, I was so ignorant. I had no concept of how hard it would be because my head was in the clouds. Like, I want to be a mum. That I hadn't acknowledged how hard it was going to be. So that's why I talk about how hard I found that 3 months, in case it helps other people. But the highs are so high. So don't let anyone, and everyone's different. I know a few mums that absolutely loved every single second of it. And you might be one of them thinking, Jesus, what was that woman talking about? It's bloody lovely. It's different for everybody. And people can't project their thoughts onto you about it. You've just got to be malleable.
And I've heard that a couple of times now, what you've said about the fact that you don't necessarily feel that intense love But that makes me feel better, because I know that, because if that were me, this is probably how you felt, I'd think there was something wrong with me.
Absolutely.
And so now I've heard a few times, or a couple of times, that that isn't how it necessarily is. So then you go into it knowing that. And I think that's a really important thing to share with people.
Yes.
I think otherwise mums are like, what's wrong with me?
I have loads of people DMing me actually saying, thank you for saying that out loud on whatever I said it on, because I thought it was just me and I didn't think you could acknowledge that. And I'm like, no, you can. Like, sometimes it doesn't come to you and that's cool. It doesn't mean you don't love the baby or you don't want the baby to be well and safe. And but you don't have that kind of euphoric moment that I assumed I would have because I wanted a baby so badly. Whereas I get them now all the time. But at the beginning, it was not so much.
I think a pet peeve of mine, and with the bump plan, we really focused on this, is that often the way that we'll speak to pregnant women is like, you'll be fine, you'll be amazing, oh my gosh, you're so strong, you'll be great during labour, like, it will be fine. And we don't want to scare pregnant women, so instead we just tell them that everything will be fantastic. And so then on the other side, when things aren't fantastic, which they're not going to be, because it is, you're literally bringing up something that has no awareness or no skills at all. I think that we're then doing pregnant women a disservice, because then they feel like shit on the other side, because they're thinking, well, everyone told me this would be fine, and actually this is really, really tough. Difficult, you know? And so I think there has to be a balance, isn't there, between, it's not necessarily scaremongering, but it's saying like, it is really hard at the beginning, but like you said, Liv, there's some amazing moments. And like
Fraser, and you will get through it.
Yeah.
And one day you'll be able to put your kid in front of a film and they'll watch the whole thing and it will be glorious.
And then you'll get 5 minutes to drink a cup of tea. But this morning's a perfect example. You know, Freya was opening a banana and it snapped in half while she was opening it, and she burst into tears, like livid, threw the banana across
the
room.
They are irrational.
So upset. And then 2 minutes later, she heard a song, Christmas song on the radio, and she was like, Mummy, I just love Christmas songs all the time. And you're just, you know, it's like just such like frustration with them and then absolute love for them. Yeah. So it all balances out, but we can't just pretend it's always perfect.
No. So yeah, that's all I'd say is, if you're feeling overwhelmed, you are absolutely categorically not the only one. And if you're not feeling overwhelmed, that's cool too. Like, it's like life.
Just write
everything
it out.
Is different for everybody, you know. And no one can give you the, there are no answers, and anyone that tells you they can give you them is talking arse.
Yeah. Liv, one thing I wanted to talk to you quickly about before we start wrapping up is the book. So talk to us a little bit about how that came about.
So I was contacted by a publisher in January 2020. And I've always been, the reason that I'm really open about how I had a baby and how life is as a solo parent is because I want people to know the highs and lows of it. I want people to know that there are non-traditional routes to parenthood, and I'm really passionate about that because I think the narrative has shifted a lot in the last maybe 6 or 7 years, where people didn't talk about it and it was very hush hush, whereas now there's a lot of people talking about it, which is amazing. But I didn't have that when I was at Amy's stage, for example. There wasn't so much that I could find easily without it being cloaked in sort of secrecy. And Herb isn't a dirty little secret. He's something I'm really proud of and that I adore. And so when the publisher came to me, I was like, yeah, absolutely, I want to write a book. You know, what a privilege, how amazing. And it was. But it also came, I signed the contract about 2 weeks before lockdown, and suddenly I had a 2.5-year-old, a full-time job, no childcare, a book deadline. And I've not written a book before, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't, you know, and it's a shit ton of work. And I had gotten so much debt with childcare and fertility that I had to sell my house. So I was in the middle of selling my house and moving as well. So it was a lot. So when I say there is blood, sweat and tears on those pages, I really frigging mean it. Because, it was amazing. I mean, what a privilege. It's amazing. I'm very proud of it. And it's not a how-to. I'm really conscious that people think it's only for women you know, who want to get pregnant. It's not a how to. I would do things really differently now if I was at Amy's stage to how I did it then. I just know how I did it, and I wouldn't say that was particularly right. So it's not a this is how you do it. It's got, you know, top 10 tips. It's just not. It's my story about how I ended up 35 single, needing to have a baby. Not needing, wanting. And it's for people, so like Amy's friends who want to know how to support her or what she's going through. Or I know a lot of people's mums have DM'd me saying I bought it because I wanted to support my daughter or whatever, because it's just things that other people won't have spoken about or thought, not spoken about, have thought about, because it's not been their life. And like, I don't know what it's like to have a partner and he can pick up Herb occasionally. I don't know what that's like, so there are things, elements of that that I wouldn't understand. And it's the flip side of that, that, you know, there's no one to help, but equally there's no one to disappoint me either. So
Amy, you need to be buying some of those for all your friends and family for Christmas.
I'm gonna put it on my in my close friends group.
Yes.
And Liv, what's the feedback kind of been? What's the reaction been to the book?
It's been really interesting because I think a lot of people read it because they thought it was going to be a step-by-step guide and so were shocked. Like my friends, I made them read it. I don't think necessarily they wanted to because they thought it was going to be a boring step-by-step manual. And they're like, oh, it's quite good. And like my brother was like, oh, you're quite good at writing. Okay, like, you know. And general feedback has been really positive, and there's been a lot of people just saying, God, stuff you've said has really resonated with me, and I didn't realize I feel like that. And I was the only person that felt like that. I thought it was just me. And that's people who have partners as well. You know, they'll often caveat their DMs by saying, by the way, I'm married, and I still felt like that. You know, and so yeah, it's been really good. I've been really lucky.
Not lucky. I think it's just that you're funny, you write beautifully, you're honest. There's nothing that you won't say. No. And that's kind of what we need. Like we said, you know, we need honesty rather than throwing people in at the deep end.
And there's no point writing a book like that and hiding any of it. Like,
yeah,
it's just not.
Exactly. Amy, there's just one last thing I've been thinking about, and I hope you don't mind me asking you this, so you don't have to answer this, but has a consideration, have you thought about kind of future-wise meeting somebody after you've had a baby this way? Is that kind of a consideration, or is it actually that you're kind of like, you know, the baby is the most important thing, and that is a kind of nice to have?
So I think one of the things that I guess concerned me about doing this was exactly that, and because I was worried that it would stop me meeting my person. But then where I kind of got to was that whoever my person is going to be is going to have me and my baby. That's that. And if they don't want me and my baby, they're not my person. So I think I absolutely will meet someone, but I was not willing to wait and do it in that order and miss my chance. I think, yeah, there's a couple of things that worried me. So as in, there was that, there's, you know, the practical things like who's going to be in the room with me while I'm giving birth and all those kind of things. But I think you get to a point where nothing anyone can say, because I know you guys are worried about horror stories earlier, nothing anyone can say is going to make me. That's when I was like, I know I'm ready, because I was like, people go, what about this? What about this? And I'm like, don't care. I want to be a mum. Yeah. So yes, so I have done, but I just, my person is going to have me and Bubba.
I think that's just a perfect answer, and I couldn't agree more. Liv, has that been kind of a consideration for you as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I'd love to fall in love. Me having a baby on my own wasn't me saying I'd never like to be in a relationship. Of course I would, but like Amy said earlier, that wasn't my prime. I realised that wasn't actually my primary want and need. My need was maternal. If someone can't, look, I'm a catch. I don't have any scary stepdad or whatever, you know. There's no sharing, there's no having to give money to anyone else, I don't have any in-laws, you know. So there are loads of pluses of us just coming with our kids and no one else. Like, that's how it is. And people get together with people with children, or especially at our age, all the time. Like, if that's even a consideration for them, even something that they're like, oh God, they've got a kid, I'm out. Like,
yeah,
it should just be. I'd feel like that about my dog as well. If they, if they're like, oh God, she's got a dog, then no, you're out. It's, and I think that's normal. I just, and if that means I die alone, I die alone. Fine.
And you've got her.
I'll die alone with a kid and a dog.
Yeah. Well, that's just, it's been so interesting to talk to you both. Amy, first of all, for you, you know, if anyone's listening to this who is considering this route or is already going through it, how would you like them to kind of get in touch with you? And
I would just DM me on Instagram is probably the best way to do it, because then I've got a little solo mamas group on there now. So that's ever growing. So I'm assuming you'll share our handles, etc. So yeah, so just DM me.
Perfect. We'll put that in the show notes for sure. And yeah, do get in touch, because it's great to try and find that community. Liv, you already know some of these communities. We can put them in the show notes, but where would you direct people?
Well, it's really tricky because some of them have closed Facebook groups that actually I should be leaving now, because they're about trying, they're for people at Amy's stage. But the Donor Conception Network is a great place, and they used to have big meetups. Obviously, it's trickier now, but they will be able to put you in contact, usually with groups in your area. There's also someone called The Stork and I, who does consulting. And I mean, if you search relevant hashtags, it's ever growing. So I'd be shocked if you didn't find some help somewhere.
Yeah. And last bits of advice from both of you for anyone thinking about this.
Save every single penny, because if you think fertility treatments is expensive, wait until childcare costs come along. We have a really broken system, and childcare has completely crippled me. And yeah, so when people say save every penny, they think it's just for the fertility treatment, because that in itself is comically expensive. But actually it's life after that. If you're a single mom and no one else is helping you, you've got to cover maternity leave. Then you've got to presumably work nearly full time, if not, and you've got to cover childcare for that. And our British system is broken. So it's very expensive to do. So yeah, never buy a coffee again. Put that fiver in a savings account and you will thank yourself.
Childcare is not something I had thought about at all when it comes
to. And I'm glad I hadn't, actually, because I would have stopped myself becoming pregnant, because it would have scared me so much if I'd have actually looked into the real logistics of it. Yeah. But actually, if you've got a baby, you make it work. But like I say, I had to sell my house to make it work.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is, it's really boring and dull and practical, but
no, it's save every penny. Yeah. Amy, any thoughts that you'd like to share?
I think mine would just be that ultimately it's your own personal decision to make about whether you want your to have a bubble by yourself or not. But if you want to, then I really believe you can and will find a way. So I know that I just felt sad for the people who were kind of saying it's ultimately it's what they want, but they just don't think that they'd have the support, etc. And I think there are ways, so go for it if that's what you want, as Liv and I have done.
And you'll find your support network. You just have to look. Oh guys, that's been just so insightful. And Amy, huge good luck in the rest of the journey. We'll be following along, obviously, and we'd love to kind of keep checking in with you. And Liv, thank you so much for everything that you've done with the book and your Instagram, helping support other single parents as well.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
I keep talking that to Amy like we're a couple. Thanks for having us. We'll have a baby together.
Thank you. Remember, I said it's a team baby.
So. It is a team baby.
Now yours too. You get once, therefore.
I know.
Collectors. Amy and Liv, have a lovely rest of the day.
Thank you. Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
Firstly, I want to say a huge thank you to my guests today for being so open and honest about personal topics on such a public platform. That takes real bravery and will help so many others. I genuinely believe that one person's honesty can help free many. If you found today's episode helpful, please do head to the show notes to find links and support our guests feel may be useful. Secondly, this podcast can only help those who know about it. If you enjoyed this podcast, it would mean so much to me if you could rate us with a 5-star rating and leave us a review, or hit follow to be the first to hear when our next episode lands. While podcasts are easy to listen to, they take a lot of effort to create, and your support in sharing Bun in the Oven will help me encourage more guests to join me for future episodes. Thank you so much for listening to this episode, and enjoy the rest of your day.